from Santa Ithaca to Foggy Davis. Yesterday when I arrived, it looked like I'm arriving to Ithaca. It was freezing and foggy.
Do you have snow in Ithaca? No?
There is snow. That's the small difference. So today I would like to tell you about the work we have done recently with Adam Falkowski, who is a postdoc at Rutgers, Yasunori Nomura, who is at Berkeley, and Tomer Volansky, who is at the Institute. And so first I would like to tell you what the mu problem is, and in particular, what the mu problem in gauge-mediated supersymmetry breaking is. And then I will tell you our proposal about a new scaling relation among the Higgs mass parameters that could relatively easily get rid of this mu b-mu problem. Then I will tell you some possible dynamical origins of where this scaling relation may come from. And then I will show you some example spectra, MSSM spectra, that would have the kind of properties that we are envisioning. And I will then comment on the Suzy CP problem and Suzy flavor problem. And at the very end, about recent work in progress about Pamela. Okay, so the mu problem. Okay, so first of all, what is mu? Mu is the only supersymmetric mass parameter that when you're trying to write down the Lagrangian of the MSSM, you can write down without invoking supersymmetry breaking. So this is a term in a superpotential because you have two Higgs tablets, an up-type and a down-type. You can just add the mass term to the two of them. Okay, so why is that a problem? Well, so let me just, in order to understand what these equations are, I have quickly written down what the different mass parameters in the Higgs potential of the MSSM are. So there is this mu parameter, which is again coming, is a superpotential term, and it's also giving you the masses to the fermions, the Higgsino masses. Okay, and the MH up and MH down terms, those are soft supersymmetry breaking terms, so those are the soft breaking scalar masses. And then the other term that will play a major role in this talk is this B mu term. So that's another soft supersymmetry breaking term, but it's an analytic term. So it doesn't involve the absolute value squared of H up or H down, but it's the product of H up times H down. Okay, so that's another. So that's a soft Suzy breaking mass parameter, and of course because the way I'm writing it, I'm assuming that it has... Oh, thank you very much. The way I'm writing it, I'm assuming that this B mu is a dimension 2 soft breaking mass parameter. Okay, and then of course there are also the quartic terms that are coming, that are related to the gauge interactions. Okay, so these are the mass parameters of the Higgs potential. And then what you are supposed to do is, you are supposed to take the minimum of this Higgs potential and then make sure that electrovig symmetry is broken in the right way. Thanks. Yeah, the electrovig symmetry is broken in the right way. You're minimizing this Higgs potential, and then you are finding these two equations that are necessary to reproduce the correct minimum with the correct Z mass. Okay, so what you are supposed to see in here, okay, so there are all these combinations of the Higgs mass parameters showing up, and they are all related to the mass of the Z boson. Okay, so one immediate problem that you may ask is that, well, there are these terms that are related to supersymmetry breaking, and then there is this mass term that is not related to supersymmetry breaking. It's a term that you can add by hand. Okay, so these two, nevertheless, due to this minimalization equation for the Higgs potential, have to be related to each other. And moreover, the other equation that is telling you the alignment of the two vacuum expectation values between the two Higgs sectors will involve this B mu parameter, the one that, as I said, will play a major role in this talk, the one that is the holomorphic supersymmetry breaking mass parameter. Okay. So what you are supposed to do is, clearly, you know, you cannot just add a mu term that is arbitrarily large. If you want it to be somehow related to supersymmetry breaking as well, then you have to forbid the H up H down term in the superpotential, at tree level. Okay, so you have to introduce some other symmetry, some U1 type symmetry that rotates H up and H down separately, so some sort of a Peccei-Quinn type symmetry. And then, of course, you know, you still want to generate that term because you need it in order to get the right electrovic symmetry breaking minimum. You just can't have it to be arbitrarily large. So you have to assume that this Peccei-Quinn symmetry is broken, but it's only broken in the supersymmetry breaking sector itself. Okay? And then there will be a new term generated. For example, if you are thinking about gravity mediation, then gravity breaks all global symmetries, so there will be a term of this sort generated, where I'm assuming that this X field is the field that is responsible for supersymmetry breaking. And if you are really talking about gravity mediation, then the supersymmetry breaking F term of this field X would be exactly of the right order for this term, for this X over M Planck term, to give you exactly the right right size mu parameter. Okay? And if you have gravity mediation, then you also have another term that you can write down, and that would then correspond to a B mu term, a term that is, again, will be a soft breaking term in the scalar potential that is giving you, you know, a term without absolute values. It's just an analytic soft breaking mass parameter. Okay? So in gravity mediation, this is fine. You get B mu and mu, they are all of the right order, and there is no problem. Okay, so this Giudice-Masiero mechanism, you know, there is a mu problem, but it's relatively simple to solve it. Okay, so now, if you are interested in gauge mediation, let me just say with a few words what gauge mediation is. So in this case, we are assuming that the supersymmetry breaking F terms are much lower than the one that is necessary for gravity mediation. So they are much lower than this intermediate scale. Could be, you know, as low as 10 to the 9, could be as low as, you know, a few hundred TeV. Okay? And in this case, what you are assuming is that the way supersymmetry breaking is mediated to the standard model fields is via loops of standard model gauge interactions. Okay, so the kind of typical expressions for the Gugino mass and the soft-breaking scalar masses are that they are related to a loop factor and then standard model gauge couplings to this soft-breaking, to the supersymmetry-breaking F term. And then there is another sector that needs to be added that mediates between the supersymmetry-breaking sector and the standard model sector, which is usually called the messenger sector, and the mass of these messenger fields, M, is showing up, and it's usually the combination of F, the Suzy breaking F term, divided by the masses of the messenger fields that shows up in these expressions for the MSSM mass parameters. Okay? So this is gauge mediation in general. Now, if you look at this, of course, in this case, this Giudice-Masiero term is too small, yes, because X, I have lowered the F component such that you know, you get the leading contributions from gauge mediation. So this will be too small, so this is not very relevant for us. It will be there, but it just doesn't give a large enough mu term. Okay. And the problem is that if I now completely decouple the MSSM and the Suzy breaking sector in the limit when the gauge coupling goes to zero, then the then there will be an enhanced Peccei-Quinn symmetry in the visible sector, and the mu term will not be generated at all in perturbation theory. Okay, so what you need to do is you need to couple the Higgs terms directly to the supersymmetry breaking sector in order to generate a mu term at all. So you do need to write down some couplings by hand. Okay. So this was done first in 96 by Dvalić, Giudice, and Pomerol, and they have asked the question, okay, let me try to write down a direct coupling between the Higgs terms, between the Higgs fields and the supersymmetry breaking sector directly, and see what kind of, you know, results I'm getting. So this is what will tell us what really the expression for the mu problem of gauge mediation actually is. Okay, so what they just said is, okay, so let me assume that I have some sort of messenger fields that are coupled to the supersymmetry breaking field X. Okay, so because I want to write down some direct coupling, I have to have some sort of SU2 doublets and another SU2 singlet field. Okay, so these are the kind of couplings that they have been assuming. And then, of course, you know, these messenger fields, these doublets and singlets, would then have a coupling to the supersymmetry breaking field X. Okay, and then you can just go and, you know, write down the diagrams that will directly contribute to the mu term. And what you will find is that there will be a mu term generated at one loop, okay, as you expect. So there will be a mu term that is a one loop factor suppressed compared to the scale lambda, where lambda is F over M for this field X. Okay, and there will also be, at the same time, a B mu term that is generated at one loop. Okay, so this is the diagram that generates the mu term, and then at the same time, there will be another diagram that is generating B mu. And both of them happen at one loop order. Is it true? It's possible. I mean, people usually refer to Dvalij, Djidic, Pomerol. I don't know. I haven't tried to understand the history so much. Of course, I looked at Djidic, Ratadze, you know, review, and they, of course, credit themselves. So, I don't know. I'll check it. In the 80s. So, he cared about gauge mediation in the 80s. Okay, I didn't know that he cared about
gauge mediation.
Because this is something... But this is something particular, yeah, but what I'm trying to say is that, you know, this becomes a problem if you're thinking about gauge mediation, yes? If you're thinking about gravity mediation, then, of course, you just say there is no direct coupling, you have the Giudice-Maziero term, and that's it. Okay, so...
In my memory of this is that the whole point was to get a new term too.
Yeah, but now I'm just trying to explain, you know, what is generically the problem, yes? But generically, you get it at one loop. Okay, that's the whole point. Yes? Okay, so mu and b mu are both generically generated at one loop. Okay? And you can check there will also be a contribution to the soft breaking masses, to the Higgses, the normal soft breaking scalar masses generated at one loop order. Okay? And for this is not very important, but it's still good to keep that in mind. Okay, so both of them are generated at one loop, which means, however, the mu parameter is a mass parameter as dimension one, and b mu, as I said, is a mass squared parameter. Okay, so if I try to compare them with a dimensionless quantity, then mu squared is effectively as if it was, you know, one loop higher than b mu. So if you try to compare these two terms, it turns out that b mu is much bigger than it would have to be. Okay, so what you find is that the b mu term turns out to be too large if you assume that that all of these soft breaking parameters mu squared and mh squared are of the same order. Okay, so then what you find is that b mu will be way too large, okay, and then you cannot find a good electroweak symmetry breaking minimum for your theory. So this is what is usually referred to as the mu problem of gauge mediation. Okay, so it's something more specific. It's like Marcus is saying, you know, you're trying to get b mu at two loop order rather than getting it at one loop order. Okay, so and as he said already, the traditional solutions are that you have to introduce some other layer of usually pretty complicated dynamics in order to make sure that this B mu doesn't come at one loop order, but it comes at two loop order. Okay? So I have written down here a few possibilities of what people have been trying to go through to solve this problem. Okay? I will give you a little bit of a flavor of each of them. I tried to review it yesterday. So one possibility is what is called a dynamical relaxation of B mu. Okay, so this is an idea, again, that was originally published in the same paper where they explained what the mu problem of gauge mediation itself is. Okay, so what they said is that if I get the mu term from something that involves d squared, this is this supersymmetric, super covariant derivative of any operator, then, because this is an anti-chiral operator, this will never generate a mu term. A b mu term, okay? Because you would need here something that is a general superfield, but if this is an anti-chiral operator, yes, it will generate your mu term, but will not generate your b mu term. So that was the idea. The idea sounds good, but to actually do it, you have to write down some really messy Lagrangian here, okay? So this is the simplest thing that they were proposing to that would actually do this. So you have to include two additional singlets here, and then this is a coupling to the messengers. You introduce some additional mass parameter by hand, and so what you can look at it, and what you will find is that indeed, you know, at tree level there will be no mu term. There will be a VEV to this field N, because you just take the equation of motion with respect to S, you will find that N squared equals MN. Okay, and then you go and try to calculate the one-loop Taylor potential. You will find that that is indeed generated, and that generates a tetpole for the scalar field S. The tetpole for the scalar field S will generate a vacuum expectation value for S, and that's a mu term. Okay, but if you try to find out whether there is an F component for S generated, it turns out that the whole potential depends on N only through Fs of N squared. There is no other dependence. So whatever, you know, N was, it will just slide such that Fs is zero at one loop. Okay, so this is what you call a dynamical relaxation. So N will just adjust itself by the equations of motion such that B mu is exactly zero at one loop order, and then you can go and try to check that at two loops it's really generated. Again, the only reason I'm presenting is to give you the idea that there is some additional, very complicated layer of dynamics that is needed, okay, to get this right.
So why were these guys so opposed to letting S acquire a VEV? Doing away with the rest of this?
I'm sorry?
I mean, what, you know, you generate a mu term if S...
That's right.
...acquires a VEV. Were there some reason they didn't want to do it that way, to get the mu term?
It doesn't work with gauge mediation because S is a singlet. Soft masses are way too small. So for gauge mediation, the NMSSM doesn't work. Because only things that are not gauge, things that have gauge charges get soft masses,
yes,
at two loops.
That's right.
S only gets soft masses at three loops. They're way too small.
Well, okay, and I guess you say you don't have enough evolution leverage. I mean, even if you set MS squared to zero at the gut scale, you evolve down.
But this is gauge mediation.
Much lower scale
where you're trying to start.
It was shown explicitly in great detail by Goriyama and I forget who his collaborators were, but it doesn't work.
Okay.
Can I ask?
Yes. Yes.
Is this a real function? Is it sensor S times X dagger times a log?
I guess there's plus Hermitian conjugate.
Okay,
in it.
Okay, then.
Yeah.
I see.
Okay. I just didn't bother to write it. Okay, then other possibility is so this is doable, but you have to introduce some singlets here. Okay, and it's relatively complicated. But the good thing about this is that these singlets are not very light. Okay, so their masses are not at the Electrowitz scale. Another possibility is that people have been thinking about, and I wasn't quite sure who did it, probably Gidic was one of the people, because I think almost every solution to the new problem has his name attached, is to introduce some light singlets. So these will be singlets of the order of the Electrowitz scale. So that's the kind of approach that Jack is asking. So there you would have, you know, some sort of modified NMSSM, but like Marcus said, the soft breaking terms are not general enough for this to work on its own. Okay, so then you need to add even more dynamics. People were thinking about adding some weak scale additional exotics that transform under SU5 or you know, some direct coupling to the message. So all of this is doable. All I'm saying is that, you know, it doesn't end here. There is probably another slide or two for each of the possibilities that you have to do. And the third separate solution that I know about that was suggested relatively recently by Roy and Schmaltz and Hitoshi, Yasunori, and David Polan is that to allow B mu to be indeed much larger than mu at the messenger scale, but then invoke some new strong dynamics in the hidden sector that would rescale B mu at the messenger scale when you have some RG running between the messenger scale and your scale at which, you know, electroweak symmetry breaking is happening. You would have some large anomalous dimension for the operator that is responsible for generating the B mu term. However, this guy, this is a chiral operator, so this will have, or anti-chiral operator, so this will have no RG running. So the mu parameter is not going to run on it. And however, you know, this guy is a real field, so it could have some RG running. And so they were coming up with some possibilities that this new strong dynamics will give you the right suppression factor. Okay, so that's another possibility. But again, you know, you need another sort of layer of, you know, interesting physics that you have to add. Okay, so what we are asking is, you know, do you actually need all of this? Is it actually such a disaster if B mu is much bigger than mu squared? Okay, so that's the question that we were asking. Now, of course, if all the terms in the denominator are of the same order in this equation, so this equation is something that you cannot touch. This is just telling you, you know, what the electroweak symmetry breaking minimum is. If all the terms in the denominator are of the same order, then that's certainly a big problem. Okay? But who said, if you assume this, then of course, you know, you just cannot satisfy this equation that gives you a real electroweak symmetry breaking minimum. But there is no strong reason for assuming that all three of these parameters in the denominator are of the same order. Okay? So you certainly don't want to raise MH up squared, because in the end, your physical Higgs, at least when tangent beta is reasonably large, is going to dominantly live in the up type Higgs. And so, you know, this will be a direct contribution to the Higgs mass. So you don't want to raise that very much. However, there is this other term, the down type Higgs mass, also showing up in this equation in the denominator. So you could actually fix up this equation if you assume that, okay, mu squared is much smaller than b mu, but, you know, if mh down squared is at least as big or even bigger than b mu, then this equation can have a simple, reasonable solution. Okay? So what we are proposing is to instead not try to add additional dynamics that will set mu squared to be of the same order as b mu, but rather let mh down squared to be even bigger, which will fix up the equation about electroweak symmetry breaking. Okay, so just to be concrete, let's look at a reasonably simple scaling relation, and I will explain how you can get that kind of relation. Okay, so mh down is proportional to some relatively large mass scale that is, you know, related to supersymmetry breaking, and then b mu is suppressed by one power of some relatively small parameter epsilon compared to that scale. And then mh up squared and mu squared would both be suppressed by two powers of the same small parameter. Okay, so if I look at this kind of scaling, what I would get is that the sine 2 beta, if I just plug in the previous equation, so the numerator has b mu in it, so that's epsilon times lambda squared. But the denominator has just a lambda squared. So this sine 2 beta would be of order epsilon. And for large, so sine 2 beta is, of course, sine times cosine. So that would imply that sine beta is of order 1 and cos beta is of order epsilon. So tangent beta would be large, but not arbitrarily large, would be related to the same parameter epsilon. It would be of the order of 1 over epsilon. Okay, so if you then look at the other equation that is telling you, you know, how to fix the soft breaking mass parameters and mu such that you get exactly the right z mass. What you find is that the terms showing up on the right hand side, what is one is mu squared, the other is mh up squared, and the third term is actually mh down squared divided by tangent beta squared. Okay, so all of these terms actually turn out to be exactly of the same order. Okay, so the good thing is that it's not mh down squared itself, but it's mh down over tan beta that is showing up, and tan beta was 1 over epsilon, and so this tells you that all three terms on the right hand side here will actually be of the same order. So doing this kind of scaling in the Higgs mass parameters will certainly not worsen the fine-tuning, the usual fine-tuning that gives rise to the little hierarchy problem of the MSSM. Okay, so if these three terms are all of the same order, and of course would all be of the same order as MZ, then it would be a completely natural electroweak symmetry breaking. Of course, you know, the problem is that still you have to somehow get the large quartic, large loop contribution to the quartic of the Higgs in order to push the Higgs above the lap bound. And so there is this irreducible contribution to the fine-tuning. So this is not going to, you know, help that, but it will also not worsen that. Okay, so it will not. So this is not on its own a solution to the little hierarchy problem. But what I'm saying is it will, you know, whatever you had, this irreducible contribution will not get worsened by the fact that I have introduced an additional mass parameter that is quite a bit bigger than the other parameters because of the suppression by tan beta. Okay? And then the question is, so can I break electroweak symmetry with this kind of setup? Well, so the requirement for electroweak symmetry breaking is, you know, that the Higgs scalar mass matrix has one negative eigenvalue. Okay, well, so if you translate that into these mass parameters, this is the condition that you find. Usually the way this is achieved is by turning mh up squared negative such that this factor is just negative. If that's true, then this is obviously satisfied. However, it's not always necessary. It's sometimes enough to just have the left-hand side is b mu, you know, just keep these guys positive and have b mu to be, you know, bigger than those. Now, how about our scalings? Would that possibly work? Well, that could possibly work because the left-hand side is b mu squared, so that's epsilon squared times this scale to the fourth. Here I have an mh, these two terms are both have an epsilon squared, and this guy doesn't have one, so all of these are of the same order. So you could either break electroweak symmetry in the traditional way or break electroweak symmetry without turning the sign of mh up squared negative. Okay? It turns out in the numerical examples that we found, you know, that correspond to our scaling, it, you know, mh up squared usually stayed positive. Okay? And electroweak symmetry breaking usually was, again, itself due to the boundary conditions that we have imposed at some relatively low scale. So it was driven by b mu and not by mh up squared. Okay. So we'll see some numerical examples where this is actually happening. Okay, so that's good. So now the question is, how would you actually get this kind of scaling among the Higgs mass parameters? Okay, so we have to couple, as we have seen, we have to couple the Higgs to the hidden sector. Okay, so we assume that there are some operators that couple the up-type Higgs to the hidden sector. So this is some operator from the hidden sector, and then there's another operator that is coupling to the down-type Higgs. And then all the Higgs mass parameters will be determined by the different correlators among these operators in the hidden sector. So you can expand them according to superfields and just, you know, pick out the appropriate expansion coefficients that will give rise to the mu or b mu. So you can pick out, you know, which the soft breaking masses will be, etc. Okay, if you have a theory which is perturbative, at least in this coupling between the hidden sector and the electroweak breaking sector, then you can just write down some simple loop diagrams that will give you the Higgs mass parameters, so you can estimate them. And clearly, you know, the mu parameter will be, so these will all be one loop effects, just like in this DGP calculation, at least in general, unless you introduce all this additional physics. And of course, you know, depending on which parameter you are talking about, there will either be, for mu, that's something that is connecting H up and H down, so there will be a coupling from each of these operators. There will be a lambda up and a lambda down showing up, and for B mu, it's also connecting H up and H down, so there will be another coupling like this. And for H up and H down, it will either be just lambda up squared or lambda down squared showing up. And this NH, again, it depends on the details of this messenger sector, how, you know, what these operators O up and O down are made of. So we just introduce some effective number of messengers that are coupled, you know, that are relevant for the Higgs sector, and then a scale F over M for the messengers that is relevant to the Higgs sector. Okay, so basically all we need to do is to make sure that the lambda up coupling is much smaller than the lambda down coupling. Okay, how much smaller? Usually a factor of 10 is enough. Okay, so if you want, you know, you can just put this in by hand. If you don't like, you know, putting in 1 over 10s by hand in a superpotential coupling, well, you can make up, I will show you what kind of story you can make up to, you know, put in a factor of 1 over 10 in a superpotential term. Okay. Now, the naive scaling would, of course, correspond to lambda d being roughly of order 1. So that would tell you, actually, lambda d, not order 1, but, you know, getting basically close to the strong coupling bound. Doesn't have to be. You can get, you know, correct numerical hierarchies, you know, by keeping both lambda up and lambda down in the perturbative regime. Okay, so how large can you take this lambda down coupling? So that's the coupling of the down type Higgs to the strong coupling sector. Well, if you care, you know, you don't want to introduce a lambda pole in the Suzy breaking sector. Another thing is that, you know, because, you know, lambda up not equal to lambda down violates messenger parity, you have to be worried whether you introduce a Phi Eliopoulos term in the messenger sector, and that would then give rise to additional contributions to the normal MSSM scalar masses that could have the wrong sign. So you have to be worried about this. But we have checked that, you know, you can actually find a relatively simple model where this thing is avoided. And the other thing is that if you take lambda down too large, and of course because the down type Higgs mass squared will depend on this lambda down, once this is really very big, then this will feed into the RGE of the down type sphermion masses in the standard model. So at some point, if you take lambda down to be too big, then you have to worry that, you know, you don't introduce a tachyonic bottom or stow. Okay.
This question: if you wanted to keep both lambda up and lambda down, yes. So lambda down is say order 1, lambda up is much smaller.
1/10.
Yeah. Don't you have a difficulty explaining why the other soft masses are the same size as the MH up squared?
Why the others? You mean which other soft masses?
Like the sleptons, quarks.
Oh, but those are coming from standard model gauge. Those are unrelated to this
but
lambda.
I'm just saying, if lambda d is in the potentials of order 1, lambda up is much smaller.
Yes.
So naively, MH up squared is much smaller than say a slepton mass.
Oh, but you know, but MH up squared, you know, also gets the usual contribution. It does get the usual, you know. It does get the usual gauge-mediated contribution as well, yes? I mean, this is an addition.
Don't you need the bottom line d mu and bottom line mh d squared to be larger than mh up squared?
Yeah.
So then,
that's right. So
that doesn't help.
I'm sorry?
So, I mean,
so lambda down
we want
is the biggest parameter, yes?
Can you make lambda down of order 1? I thought you really. I'm just confused.
Yeah,
like I'm just not
that's right. I can.
I'm
yeah.
just confused why you don't have to take lambda d to be near the strong coupling limit. I mean, I can understand how it works if lambda d is near the strong coupling
limit. Yes.
I'm not understanding how it works if lambda d is much smaller than that. I don't see how the model can work.
Why not?
Because it seems to me that then the soft message you get from lambda, the mhd squared, if, let's say lambda d is order 1.
Yes.
Then isn't mhd squared of order, say, a slepton mass? If lambda d is order a standard model.
Okay, so... So that depends on the details of, you know, how large, you know, this NH is within the, you know. So we have allowed ourselves to have a different number of effective messengers for the Higgs sector and
that
the...
That sort of amounts to using, yes. I mean, I could absorb this NH by using a sort of like Tuft coupling.
That's right, yeah, that's right.
Within that coupling.
Yes, and we are allowing ourselves also a slightly different F over M for the Higgs sector and...
It seems like, I mean, this may be fine, but I'm just saying, it looks like the loop expansion is on the verge of breaking down when this thing works. Because you have to take NH times lambda down squared to be of order not too far from, say, 16 pi squared to get all the scaling to work.
So that would be the most natural thing.
Yes.
So.
Okay, just want to make sure.
But again, you know, so what I agree is that if this lambda H is exactly the same as lambda that gives rise to the usual soft breaking masses, yes, then you are right.
Because I mean, the multiplicity factor also.
Yeah, the multiplicity factor, I agree, doesn't play a role. That can be absorbed into lambda up and lambda down.
Sure.
But this scale lambda h that cannot. So if you have a ratio, a factor of 2 or 3 in this lambda h versus lambda, that can help a lot. Okay, so the kind of examples that I will be showing you, there will be slightly different values for lambda h and the lambda for the messengers that are giving rise to the usual soft breaking masses. Okay. So now, if you want to make up a dynamical story for, you know, why lambda up is much smaller than lambda down, of course you can. It's the usual picture, you know. You can call it an RS example, or you can call it some, you know, some hidden strong coupling. So in that case, you will just assume that H down is something that is sort of mostly a composite that is coupled with an order one factor to Susie breaking, while H up is mostly an elementary field, so its wave function at the point where you have supersymmetry breaking is very small. And then, of course, what you would find is you would, in this case, find the exactly right scaling with this RS flavor type function showing up, where the C would be the bulk mass parameter for the up type and the down type Higgses. And so clearly what you would find is that if you assume that the F of D, that the C of the down type quark is less than 1/2, then, you know, F of D is basically 1, and the epsilon parameter would exactly correspond to, you know, this F of U is this usual RS flavor function. Again, I don't want to emphasize this too much, just, you know, if you want to have a reason, you know, I don't think you need a reason for putting in a factor of 10 by hand, you know, in a superpotential, in supersymmetry. But if you want, then, you know, you can make up an additional story. Okay, and you get, you know, this epsilon to be exactly of this order of F up. Okay, so you can get this kind of hierarchy that I'm interested in. And again, there are different levels of trying to explain where it comes from. What I would like to emphasize is what kind of, you know, phenomenological consequences this kind of solution to the mu problem would have. Or, you know, maybe I shouldn't call it the solution of the mu problem. What I'm saying is that what people usually call the mu problem is not necessarily a problem. You know, you can live with that if you make some additional adjustments in the Higgs sector. So clearly, you know, the most important thing is that this m down squared will be the largest. The mh down squared will be the largest mass parameter in the Higgs sector. So effectively, you know, one of the Higgs doublets, one of the scalar Higgs doublets will be decoupled. So you'll be in this decoupling limit. The other issue is that the mu parameter could be pretty small. And it is possible that the mu parameter is actually smaller than the Gugino masses. So it is very possible that in this case, the neutralino would be mostly Higgsino-like. Okay, so that's another thing that shows up usually in the spectra that we are looking at. Now, another issue is that because MH up squared and MH down squared have a relatively big hierarchy in them, when you are trying to do the RG running from the messenger scale down to the scale of where these masses actually show up, then you will see that a Phi Heliopoulos term will be generated because due to the running, because MH down squared is much bigger than MH up squared. So you will get an additional contribution to all the usual fermion masses due to this Phi Heliopoulos term that you can calculate, which is proportional to the mass MH down squared. So the traditional sum rules that people are usually trying to use for checking, what kind of supersymmetry breaking sector you have, one of them, the most the way written in the traditional form that the trace of hypercharge time mass squared and B minus L times mass squared vanishes. So these individually will not be satisfied. There will be a correction to, for example, if you look at the hypercharge times M squared, so that's the one that people are usually quoting, there will be a correction to the right-hand side of this. However, there's one combination that still doesn't pick up an RG contribution, so you can check which combination of these two guys, there is this 5/4, so you can check that there is one sum rule that should still be satisfied without a correction, and then there is the one, the traditional one, that does pick up a relatively large correction. Okay? And because, again, MH down squared is relatively big, and of course we are still also assuming that tangent beta is also not very small, so the down type Yukawa couplings are also somewhat enhanced. Okay, so that will tell you that the down type third generation fermion masses will also pick up a relatively large contribution to their running. And I guess there is a sign here, because you have to worry about this not going negative. So I think I screwed up the sign here. So that actually will tell you that you cannot take MH down and tangent beta arbitrarily large, because at some point, these guys will start turning negative at some scale, and you get a tachyonic bottom or Staub. Okay. So what we did is we wanted to make sure that this is really, not just words, but it's possible to get a complete spectrum that really breaks electroweak symmetry and has the kind of properties and has the kind of scalings built into them. So we kept running Suspect and Soft Susie for several weeks, and we were playing with, what is the best possible spectrum to present. So we were assuming that the messenger scale is relatively low. We took it basically as low as possible and have as little running in the theory as possible. So we will have these two scales, these two mass scales. One is sort of the effective F over M in the Higgs sector, and the other effective F over M that gives rise to the usual MSSM masses. And we chose, again, so this is the kind of thing that Marcus is asking, we chose basically the messenger, the sector that is relevant for the Higgs sector, to be somewhat smaller than the messenger sector that is relevant for the usual MSSM masses. And one more thing that is important for the spectra, that we wanted mu to be as small as possible to sort of show, the scaling in its most extreme form. But of course, you have to make sure that, because you're talking about gauge mediation, the masses of the charginos and the Higgsinos are not necessarily just the lab 2 bounds, but there is a stronger bound from the Tevatron 2-photon plus missing energy bound. So actually, if you wanted mu to be of order 100 GeV, that's no longer allowed because of this final state. If, of course, we have taken the supersymmetry breaking scale to be very low, so this final state you would usually produce in this case, and so we had to raise mu and the Gugino mass a little bit. It had, the bounds are more around 150 or 180 GeV rather than 100 GeV, as you would naively think, just for a general MSSM analysis. Okay, so this is one possible mass spectrum that we obtained. So this is the most conservative one in the sense that really, you know, the Higgs mass is as heavy as it has to be. So it is pushed above the lab bound, but it's pushed above the lab bound at the price of putting in a relatively large scale for the Gugino masses. So here you see I have allowed myself to put in a factor of 3 between the scales, the effective F over M that is responsible for the masses in the Higgs sector versus the ones that are responsible for the masses in the MSSM, you know, for the usual MSSM matter fields. Okay, and here you can see I took lambda d. Okay, so there is a factor of a little bit more than a 5 between lambda up and lambda down here. And of course, the price of, you know, pushing the Higgs mass above the lab bound is that my stops will be very heavy, as otherwise I can't push it above the lab bound without assuming any new dynamics. So I won't have, the fine tuning that the usual little hierarchy problem is not cured here because of the stop contribution to the Higgs mass parameter. Okay, so now you can play a little bit and relax this, assume that there is something that will also solve the little hierarchy problem. Okay, here you don't need that much, here you just need 2 GeV, and I lowered the spectrum a little bit. Okay, so that's not that different. You see, the way I achieved it is by lowering the F over M in the matter sector. Okay, and it's a pretty similar spectrum, except F over M in the matter sector is a little bit lower. So that means that the stop mass comes down and there is a little bit less fine tuning. Of course, now my Higgs is not heavy enough, so you have to have a little bit of a contribution. Now, this 1 GeV shift probably is possible from assuming that the strong dynamics itself generates an additional contribution to the quartic. Okay. Now, if you want to be even more bold and really solve the hierarchy problem itself, yes, then you can actually lower, you know, the scales even further. And what we did is, of course, you know, the important thing is that gauge mediation itself has another source for the little hierarchy, namely the fact that, you know, the squarks are usually predicted just because of the much bigger strong coupling and additional Casimir factors. They usually come out to be a factor of 10 heavier than the right-handed slaptons. So if you want to, you know, get rid of that, so it's not just the little hierarchy problem, but that's another issue about minimal gauge mediation. So what you can do is you can allow a different F over M for the doublet and the triplet messengers. So that's what we did here. So this would be the triplet messenger F over M. This would be the doublet messenger F over M. So that would then lower the stop masses to pretty low values. So there would be fine tuning. The fine tuning would be reduced to about 10%. Of course, the prices, you know, you really, really need to get some additional contribution from the quartic. And this, actually, we have checked, this much you cannot get from just saying that there's another operator that is coupling from the strong dynamics that involves the up-type Higgses. The problem is that, of course, that would go with lambda up to the fourth power. Yes, so that would be something that, you know, if I believe that all my scalings are coming from lambda up and lambda down, then the additional contribution to the quartic would come with the lambda up to the fourth power, and that would not be enough to make up the difference, obviously, you know, give you at most a GeV shift. Okay, so for this, again, so this has no hierarchy problem, but you have to somehow explain, you know, why this 101 is shifted to 115. Okay, and then there's another variation of this that is very similar, and again, here you have a little bit bigger tangent beta, but it's pretty similar to the previous. Well, again, as I said, it's not the Lepchagino bound that matters here. So that was my comment here. That I could make it much lower. I could make it up as low as 100 GeV, and the Lepchagino bound is fine.
Okay.
The problem is that there is a much stronger bound for gauge mediation from the 2-photon plus missing energy signal. So that actually restricts the Higgsinos and the Chargenos to be more of the order of 200 GeV. Okay. Well, there's always a mixture, so there is some bound on the M1/2 mu plane,
mm-hmm.
Okay, and actually that plot doesn't really exist. Actually, Patrick Mead and Matt Rees and David Shi are actually working on, you know, trying to convert the I forgot whether it's D0 or CDF that published a paper to really convert it to a bound on this new M1/2 plane. And so they have a conference proceedings where they have that plot. And so basically what we try to do is just stay within that region. So it's a non-trivial question, you know, what fraction is Higgsino, what fraction is Beano, but that signal will be there at some level, and there is some bound in the mu M1/2 plane. If you want, I can show you that afterwards. Okay, so two more comments. SUSY CP problem. So the question is whether the soft breaking mass parameters are going to be real or not. Okay, it turns out that there are relatively strong bounds on the phases of the soft breaking mass parameters in gauge mediation. However, in this approach where we are adding this direct coupling between this direct linear coupling between the up type and the down type Higgs and the SUSY breaking sector, actually allows a relatively simple way of explaining yourself out why you don't introduce any complex phases here. What you can do is, if you assume that lambda up and lambda down have some complex phases, you can redefine your up type and down type Higgses, okay, and absorb those phases. Of course, they will then show up in the Yukawa couplings, but then what you can do is you can then reabsorb them into the SU2 doublet fields. And so if the supersymmetry breaking sector is such that it preserves CP, so if, you know, the VEFs don't introduce additional CP violation, then all these parameters in the bases that I have just shown you will be real at the same time, and you won't introduce a SUSY CP problem in gauge mediation. Okay, so that's relatively simple. And how about the flavor problem? Well, you know, one of the reasons why you are talking about gauge mediation to begin with is that gauge mediation solves the flavor problem, because the soft breaking masses are functions of the standard model quantum numbers, but it solves it at the messenger scale. Okay, so what we need to make sure is that what is given at the messenger scale is not messed up by the RG running between the messenger scale and the low scale where we are interested in measuring flavor violation. Okay, so the main worry, of course, is that this MH down squared is relatively big and it's enhanced by this lambda down over lambda up factor, and tangent beta itself is also enhanced by lambda down over lambda up. So there will be these additional contributions to the soft breaking parameters the ones that feel the down type Yukawa couplings. Okay. Now, the nice thing about this is that you can actually show that this effect will only show up in uptype in processes involving uptype quarks. Okay, the reason is that, of course, what we are saying here, that the off diagonality, the flavor violating effects, are aligned with the downtype Yukawa couplings here. Okay, so you can go into a basis where the downtype Yukawa couplings and all these soft masses are diagonal. Okay, so the only source for flavor violation will be that that's not the same basis as the uptype quarks. Okay, so this, while it will introduce some flavor changing effects, it will only show up in the uptype sector. And the uptype sector is the one that is much less constrained than the downtype sector. Of course, you know, the most severe constraints are coming from KK bar mixing, but from DD bar mixing, the constraints are much weaker, so this will not be a strong constraint on our model. Okay, so the last thing, mu parameter and Pamela. Okay, so what you should be asking is, what the hell does mu have to do with galactic positrons? And the answer is, that's a very, very good question. Probably has as much to do as a 1G VZ prime or a 30 MeV leptophobic, leptophilic Z prime or many other models. Okay, very good. Okay, to summarize, okay, so what I have shown you is that the mass relation of gauge mediation, which usually is taken to be a very problematic of gauge aspect of gauge mediation, may actually be okay if at the same time we are also taking the downtype Higgs mass parameter to be, you know, the dominant one. So if that's the one that is even bigger than B mu. Okay, so what I have shown you is that this kind of hierarchy in the soft breaking mass parameters is not very hard to achieve if, you know, as necessary anyway, these guys are directly coupled to supersymmetry breaking, as they have to be. Electrophilic symmetry breaking is possible even without MH up squared turning upside down if the electrophilic symmetry breaking is driven by B mu. Suzy CP problem can be addressed. The flavor problem is not reintroduced, and we have some specific predictions. Of course, you know, that all depends on, you know, being able to measure all the, you know, soft breaking parameters of the MSSM. So it would be effectively the decoupling limit in the Higgs scalar sector. So it's effectively a one Higgs doublet model for the LHC. The Higgsinos would probably be light. The sum rules will have a sizable violation, and the spodum and tau masses would get a sizable shift themselves. Okay, that's it.
Questions?
So I lost track. What is the LSP composition in this model?
Well, so the LSP, the true LSP would be the gravity, no? Yes, because it's gauge mediation. The NLSP, again, it is a function of mu and m 1/2.
Right.
Yes. So it's, you know, it could be dominantly Higgsino-like, but dominantly, well, again, it depends on how much smaller mu is compared to M1/2. Now, in the kind of examples that I showed you, I didn't write down here what the, okay, I didn't really write down, I didn't write down the composition, but as far as I remember, it's basically an order one mixture of both of them, because M1/2 is not taken to be much bigger than mu. So it's of the same order. I think mu is always the smallest parameter. That's how we were trying to pick these points. But okay, so here you get 180 and the other one is 250 or something. So that's why, you know, this bound is still applicable, the one from, you know, the two photon plus missing energy. Okay. Yes.
It seems like from one of the maybe least attractive things about this, at least in the things you presented, is that this Yukawa coupling lambda up, it's going to blow up right away. So this theory doesn't really have much.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's a coupling that is in the, you know, it's in the dynamical supersymmetry breaking sector. Yes, so. I mean, if you believe the RS sector itself, yes, if you believe that this is like RS, yes, then HD itself is a composite field, yes.
Well,
if you think of it like that.
Now they're not under control effective field theory, so you might wonder whether any of the calculations,
whether it has a good UV completion.
Yeah, or whether the calculations, yeah.
It's like, does RS have a UV completion, yes?
Well, the UV completion is right where your model is, so you're not insensitive to the UV. It's not a philosophical issue, it's a phenomenological issue, right?
Okay, it's like...
If the UV completion could be put at the gut scale, then it's, you know, it's purifying,
sure,
your model.
No, no,
now
I
it's
agree.
Right at the messenger scale where you're calculating your Suzy breaking, so you might wonder if it would change the answer.
So I agree that you have to present an actual model of strong supersymmetric dynamics that has these features. We are supposed to, but we haven't. That's supposed to be the next, obviously.
So if you observe this spectra, how can you tell if it's a sort of a numerical accident, like I think you're saying, or if it's some very complicated dynamics?
Without knowing anything about the Suzy breaking sector itself. I don't think you can tell it. I mean, all you can tell is, you know, what the boundary conditions are, roughly, and, you know, where it came from. You need to know, I think, about the Suzy breaking sector. That's my guess.
So people have just had a reasonable idea of what sort of cancellations you did. Everything didn't have to be 1-to-1, but, you know, a factor of a few. If they had the rack, if they had that philosophy, they never would have thought there was.
I think so. That's more or less what we are saying, exactly. That the new problem is not... That's why we don't call it a new solution to the new problem, but a new approach. It's not necessarily really a problem.
Did I get that right? If you want to land D of order 1, there have to be about 160 of these effective...
Oh.
Reason.
No, I don't think so.
You didn't have 4 pi over square root.
So if you look at these, spectra here, lambda d, okay, 2, and what we have assumed here is nh is 1, and no, I don't think so.
No, I'm just going, didn't you write down that lambda d was of the order of 4 pi divided by square root of nh?
Well, that's when it's... When it's non-perturbative, that's when it's large. Well, that's what we were trying in this spectra. Actually, it turns out, you know, there's another issue that if you really try to push lambda d very, very large, yes, then that means that MD is very large. You start hitting just numerically the point when one of either this bottom or this tau turns tachyonic. Okay, so in the numerical spectra, when we were trying to play the soft Suzy, you know, we never found one that, I think I was trying to put up the biggest one. What was the biggest one? Yeah, this was the biggest one that I could find numerically. Without, you know, so this was, I think, something that just before, you know, this bottom hit tachyonic.
Thank you again.
Thanks.